We're ready for some football, baby.
It's a Football Friday with the boss.
I call shot like a boss.
And the gloss.
Check out my lip gloss. I only rock clear.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
I got that.
Welcome in. I'm David Gow, the boss, and next to me, Carla Dawson, the gloss. And we are in the midst of the sports equinox.
Oh, it's the best week ever.
So much is going on. NBA season just kicked off. And next segment, we're going to get a chance to visit with NBA expert Joel Blank. He's also a radio show host at KFNC Houston. And I really look forward to visiting with him about all things NBA. I'm especially interested in his take on the rookie class and who's going to make an impact this year. It'll be fun to hear Joel's insights on the rookie class.
And the drama with the NBA championship teams in the Celtics and the Warriors. We have the Celtics with their coach, the Warriors with the punching incident. I mean, it'll be good to see what Joel thinks and if any of that is going to spill over. And in Boston specifically, is there more to come?
Well, it's intriguing because, yes, both those teams, I guess if we were setting favorites today, I'd bet on both the Celtics and the Warriors to return to the finals. Probability-wise, both of them won't make it. But it's going to be intriguing to see these two teams go down the stretch. But to be sure, there are other teams, and we should talk to Joel about teams like the Nets, who can they finally put it together when they get a Kevin Durant, they'll have Kyrie. Of course, Ben Simmons, we haven't seen him play in a long time. It'll be fascinating to see if they can put those pieces back together on the Nets.
And to see if he feels there's any hope for the Lakers. They've got Westbrook baggage. How long is that going to be hanging on? So, you know, it's interesting. It's going to be fun.
And I'm a big fan of Joel Embiid's on the court. I think he's special. He's different. He's not that prolific three-point shooter that we see in the modern basketball. He can play a low post game. It's fun to see a throwback game that he brings to the table. And so the 76ers, when you think about Joel Embiid and James Harden and P.J. Tucker and the team they've got, I think they're a team that will be contenders deep into the postseason for the Eastern Conference.
And I think Joel Embiid is a perfect teammate for James Harden. James, as we saw in Houston, being where we're broadcasting, not a great leader. And Joel Embiid is the face of that franchise. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out this year.
So over the course of the show, we're going to talk some NBA, NFL, NCAA. We're going to have a great mix of topics all across sports. It'll be great to dive into this equinox. That will be next when we return. It will be Joel Blank, NBA expert, KFNC Houston. Look forward to hearing from Joel. That up next here on The Boss and the Gloss of Sports Map Radio.
Football Friday with The Boss and the Gloss continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
Joining us now, the Progressive Insurance guest line, Joel Blank. He is a radio show host on KFNC Houston. Joel, thanks for joining the show. You're on with David and Carla.
My pleasure to always talk to you guys. Looking forward to speaking about the NBA season.
Yeah, NBA season. Exciting that we're finally here. We're at that sports equinox. It's an exciting time. Let's talk about the two teams coming back to defend their great runs last year, the Celtics and the Warriors. Each of them have had some off-court issues. I'd love to get your insight on the Celtics and what went on with their coach.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that we're still getting all the details to surface, but what you did find out is a guy that had deep relationships that were built over time with his players in Udoka. Suddenly left his whole team kind of reeling when the decision was made that he would no longer coach the Celtics. And I thought right from the get-go, look, it's something strange when the organization, as much as I've worked in franchises, front offices, we would have done anything and fought tooth and nail to sweep it under the rug and handle it internally. The fact that the Celtics were out in front of this kind of told me that there was enough there that they didn't want this guy to coach their team this year or maybe ever again. And that is something that has to be overcome over time, no matter who replaces them, whether the guy was on the staff or not. The good news is, from a roster perspective, adding the guys that they've acted, it starts with Malcolm Brogdon and some of the other key pieces. They would have loved to have the guy they added in Danilo Gallinari, a guy that could have been huge for them, but he unfortunately tore his ACL in the offseason. But they've made upgrades. They've gotten better, which they needed to do. And they're going to be heard from again. And we saw them, you know, as they kicked off the season against the Sixers, and we realized this team is really talented. And as long as you have Jaylen Brown and, you know, the guys that they have built around Jason Tatum, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with in a very strong Eastern Conference. I think from a Warriors perspective, they sit on the top of the mountain for a reason. And until you can prove that you can beat them, I don't know that, you know, that they have anything to worry about. They're trying to add pieces as well. But as long as you have the Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson, you have enough. And then everybody wants to play with you and watch you play against everybody else. So they can make a big deal out of the fact that Draymond Green and Jordan Poole got into it. But I think more so than anything else, the way you saw that, Steve Kerr said, this is the biggest dilemma we've had to deal with since we came together as a unit. What that basically said in coach speak and organizational speak is, this isn't a big deal, but we need you to think it is so that when we don't punish him and he doesn't miss a regular season game, you'll think it's okay.
Yeah, I agree with you completely, Joel. And I also think, you know, you got to credit the Warriors organization leaning on their experience that, you know, I guarantee you the top brass went to Jordan Poole and said, can you live with this guy going forward? And he said, yes, he's not coming back if Jordan Poole is not okay with it. And I think that says a lot for them. And I think people really, when you're on the top, there's one place to go and people want to shoot you down at every chance they can. And I think that's what we've seen the last couple
of Carla, weeks. The other thing is, too, in the organizations, and I've seen it happen at practice, this isn't something that is the first time it's ever happened
that's
in an
what
NBA
I keep
gym.
Hearing.
I mean,
okay.
It happens all the time. It's just how the team handles it dictates how people react to it.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm glad to hear you say that because Kenny Smith said the same thing. And I was like, well, Kenny Smith, that's another upstanding guy just like you. So, I hate that that's part of it, but that is part of it. And I think, you know, the unfortunate thing was some turncoat leaked it. And that's, to me, one of the bigger problems that the Warriors have to deal with is who did that in-house to TMZ. But, hey, once there's a video, it's a lot worse, right?
We know that. The judge and jury of the world isn't in a courthouse anymore.
That's
it's
right.
In social media and cell phones. And unfortunately, that dictates and has a lot more power than it's ever had before.
Amen. Let me ask you on the other side of the Warriors opening night, they face the Lakers. The Lakers, I mean, Anthony Davis got his, LeBron got his. What in the world are they missing? And do you see this team being able to fix themselves over the season and be a contender?
I really don't. I think that, you know, Russell Westbrook is a huge problem, primarily because of the fact that his salary is so high at 40-plus million, and it's on the final year. Their hopes have to be, for him and for the team, they can find another home for him and in the process get a few pieces. It's not their big three that's the problem. It's the supporting cast mm-hmm. that they can't put together because they don't have any money or draft picks to get who they need. So they're looking at the waiver wire, and they're trying to get established veterans that other teams are just letting go of to take a flyer on. But that's not going to be enough to be a force to be reckoned with in the playoffs. It might make the play-in tournament or make the playoffs, but I don't see it going a lot farther, and that's not going to be okay for LeBron James and or Anthony Davis. It's going to be interesting how they try and play it out, because it's unfortunate that we've seen kind of the entire aura of NBA basketball go to more of a shooter's mentality and a shooter's league, and that doesn't fit Russell Westbrook, because in the process, Russell Westbrook, a guy that's a first ballot Hall of Famer that put up numbers his whole career, is looked at now as an outcast that can't find a home in this league. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem the Lakers have. They have it for one more year, but they have it for 40-plus mil. And they're going to have to try and find a team willing to take him on and give up some pieces. But the one thing they lack that every team that's willing to do that for them is draft picks. So they're going to have to go deep into their future to try and get creative to give up what another team was willing to take so that they're willing to take on Russ's contract. I think that's really the only way they become a better team as the season starts.
Yeah, tough sledding there. That's going to be hard to figure out a solution there.
They brought it on themselves.
Though. Yeah, they did.
Give it that.
We're talking to Joel Blank. He's a radio show host on KFNC Houston, NBA expert. Joel, what rookies are you most excited to see play this year? And do you have a vision for who will be Rookie of the Year when we get to the finish line?
You know, I really don't. I mean, I look at it and say, gone are the days where the top three picks in the draft are going to be bona fide all-stars that are franchise changers, that are guys that you can't live without. And the draft has changed just like the league has changed in terms of analytics and a shooter's league, as we were talking about, to where draft picks now are all based on potential. And those potential picks can either boom or bust and determine the futures of general managers and coaches and teammates. And so with that being said, look, I look at Jabari Smith and I say, look, from a Houston perspective, that's a hell of a talent that I thought was the best player in this entire draft. But I say that by also saying that what I saw of Jabari Smith is a guy that's not going to be the end-all, be-all of who he's going to be in his career in year one. I think it's going to take a few years. I think that Paolo Banchero is the most polished and ready to play now of the picks that were taken high. And obviously, unfortunately, Chet Holmgren was lost for the season with an injury. But I don't know that he was ready to make a full impact either. Paolo's the guy that's going to show you the most, that has the most polish, that already has that NBA body. So I think that he'll be the front runner to win Rookie of the Year. But I think that as we look at their careers, it'll be a far different story from who wins Rookie of the Year to who ends up with the best career. Because I think that's still to be determined. But I think Jabari Smith has as good a chance as anybody of being the guy when everybody's left, you know, when the dust settles and whoever's left standing. I think Jabari Smith might be the best player in the draft. But I think that early on, Paolo Banchero will be the guy that probably reaps the most benefit from playing now.
You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Joining us now, the Progressive Insurance guest line, Joel Blank. He is a radio show host on KFNC Houston.
Okay, Joel, you are a basketball savant amongst many other wonderful things. So I want you to take me into the minds of the Phoenix Suns and their general manager. I love Monty Williams. Obviously love the pieces they've constructed on that roster, with the exception of DeAndre Ayton, which I had issues with him coming out of college. Help me with this. So the last we see DeAndre Ayton is him being benched in the playoffs, and he and Monty Williams getting into it on court. He's not talking to him. They don't have any dialogue over the summer. They try and Indiana wants him. And Phoenix matches the offer, brings him back. Then we go forward to media day, and they ask him, you know, are you, DeAndre, you know, are you excited about, you know, the fact, how do you feel about the Suns matching your offer? He looked like someone just put liver down the back of his throat, and it took a minute, and he's like, yeah, that's cool. What is going through the minds of Phoenix? Why is this guy back in Phoenix?
Boy, Carl, I wish I knew. I wish I could tell you unequivocally I had an answer for you and I knew what they were doing when they brought him back. They tried to trade him all offseason as well. So he had to have the feeling he wasn't wanted, and either the market for him was so, you know, thin that he couldn't get the money elsewhere. Otherwise, even if I'm him, I'm not sure I want to resign there. But now that they have signed him, you ask what's going through the general manager and his mindset. Well, I've got a veteran lineup, and I got a veteran locker room led by Chris Paul that I have to have faith in that will be able to work it out, with a coach that has great communicator, and hopefully that everybody, you know, whether it's team meetings or, you know, side meetings first and then bigger party meetings, can say, hey, our ultimate goal hasn't changed. We're trying to win a championship. We know the pieces that we have were good enough to get us almost over the top in the last couple of years. We need to figure it out and add more to what we already have instead of worrying about guys jumping ship. So we got to figure it out. And then as it relates to that, the second call that the general manager should be making after figuring that out is Rafael Stone and the Houston Rockets. What are you willing to give up for Eric Gordon? Because Eric Gordon does not fit the Rockets and this youth movement and this young nucleus of 19, 20, 21-year-old kids. Eric Gordon, if Rafael Stone was willing to take Phoenix's offer, if you believe what you've heard in the past, could have been had for a first-round pick. They didn't do it. In retrospect, they should have done it, and that was the missing piece that cost them a year ago. Don't let it catch you again this year. Call the Rockets. say, what is it going to take? We want to make a deal now so there's no competition. If it means a first-round pick, those picks don't mean anything to me, being the Phoenix Suns drafting at the back end of the first round. What means more to me is having another scorer that is a proven commodity in this league that I can add to my mix, that isn't going to be a guy that changes the locker room in a negative way, and gives me another piece that allows me to compete with the best teams in the league and in the conference so that I can win a championship, Chris Paul can win a championship, and we can get over the hump.
We're talking to Joel Blank, NBA expert. Okay, let's talk about the 76ers. I know you have worked with Daryl Morey before. I know you know them well. And, of course, the distraction of Ben Simmons is gone. What's the outlook for the 76ers this year?
I think more so than anything else, David, it's James Harden finally has had something that's motivated him. Teams that I've worked with and guys that have worked with him since and before have constantly been looking for that button that can be pushed that gets James Harden to kind of dial in, focus more, take better care of himself, and do what's needed to be done to win a championship. He has all the money in the world. That hasn't motivated him once he got his contract, and then the Adidas contract only added to that being a problem instead of a solution. Now the fact that people are questioning, is he a max player? Is he worth what he's made and what he should be making this year? He took a pay cut. So now he's betting on himself. And after game one, you saw a different James Harden that gave you 30-plus points and almost a triple-double with rebounds and assists, 8 and 7, I think. And he's understood a little bit more that his value can be felt by how he makes Joel Embiid's life easier, as well as how he makes the rest of the league look like they can't guard him. And I think that if he continues to play that way, there's good things for the Sixers and even better things for him ahead, because it is a prove-it year for James Harden. And I think the entire fate and fortune of the Sixers will rest on two things: the health of Joel Embiid and the ability of James Harden to be a chameleon and adapt to the fluid situation the Sixers have. They have enough pieces. They have a third option that most people would say could be a second option on a lot of teams, in Tobias Harris. They've got a really good young nucleus of talent that can get better along the way as well.
And PJ Tucker.
James Harden is the wild card.
Yeah. Yeah, very true.
A big wild card. We've seen him excellent. We've seen him tank. I mean, that's just a big swing. But obviously during the regular season, for the most part, he's been exceptional.
Yeah, but he's
and I think that, you know, we've always known that he's been kind of vulnerable in the playoffs, but we've always been able to rely on James Harden, the regular season player. Last year, that wasn't the case.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And whether it was his fault or the Nets' fault, when he bailed on them and then didn't come through and with a team that was, you know, ridding him, he got rid of all the supposed distractions to his game, Kyrie Irving and KD and all that, and still didn't perform like the old James Harden. Now the arrow's pointed firmly on the beard, saying, now it's on you to do something you haven't been able to do. We need you to do that.
Yeah, so true, Joel. And speaking of the Nets, do you have faith that these big three, KD, Kyrie, and Ben Simmons, can actually reach their potential? I mean, I don't myself. I don't trust Kyrie, and I haven't been given any reason to trust Kyrie that he can make it through a season. He's always got something that seems to thwart his efforts to make it through a season. And then Ben Simmons, the last time we saw him on the court was June of 2021, and it wasn't pretty. So what?
I think Ben Simmons is the wild card there.
Okay.
I think Ben Simmons is the guy that I don't trust, that I still haven't seen in all of his years in the NBA that has proven that he's worth the money he's being paid.
Yeah.
I think Kyrie lost a lot of money, and he left a lot of money on the table a year ago, and he's a free agent at the end of the year with more money to be gained. So he has the most focus that I can think of. Kevin Durant doesn't like the legacy of being a whiner. He doesn't like the fact that it got out that he asked for a trade. He knows that he's been clamoring his whole career to play with Kyrie and be the man and do the things that he didn't get enough credit for doing with a team that was already constructed in Golden State. So I expect a big year out of both KD and Kyrie. And with the supporting cast they have, even as much of Ben Simmons being a wild card that can help them, I believe that even without Ben Simmons, we forget that Kevin Durant was a toenail away from putting his team in a position to win a title without Kyrie and without James Harden. So I believe the Nets are going to have a hell of a year. I believe that they're going to be in competition for the East and for a title. And I believe that the only thing that can stop them would be internal strife that gets to be too much with too many egos and too many hands in the kitchen. Because I don't believe Steve Nash has control of his team.
No, I
agree. I believe that they need veterans. Kyrie said, we can coach this team. Well, if you can, then you might as well start by coaching them with their psyche and their personality on a daily basis with culture.
Right. Amen. And, you know, I really credit Sean Marks and Joe Tsai for how they handled the Kevin Durant trade request that got out. I mean, they were not entertaining it. I mean, they put it out big and nobody answered. And I understand that. And I think that really, to me, and I'll be curious to see what you think, Joel, it seems to me that KD is maturing. Like, that situation kind of brought him back a little bit. Like, I saw him speak out on this Draymond Green, Jordan Poole situation, saying, basically kind of defending the Warriors and how they were handling it. And I was like, wow, that's mature. Like, he's actually, and I think it's like, hey, the Warriors have always been good to me. And so maybe he's going to think now with the Nets, like, hey, I didn't like that getting out. I'm going to be the man. Maybe he's going to be the adult in the room now.
You hope so, because you know what? As much as he wants his reputation to be one of the greatest players to ever play the game, the ongoing reputation of Kevin Durant is a diva that's hypersensitive, that can't handle it when there's heat in the kitchen. And so you hope that he's able to step up, change a little bit, kind of alter his game and his locker room behavior to assist the team and do what's needed to be done for them to win. I think the real refreshing thing to me, Carla, in the whole process was finally a team realized that when they have a long-term contract at big money for a player, they can't dictate being traded and get out of town. James Harden and Deshaun Watson and all these guys, they feel like, you know, contracts used to be a thing that bound them to a team. Now they felt like it was a small detail that could be overlooked in a heartbeat. I'm glad the Nets held their ground and said, you know what, if you want your money and you want to play basketball, you'll play for us or nobody else.
I agree. I give exec of the year to Sean Marks and Joe Tsai for how they handled that and hopefully set a tone for other diva superstars who think the word contract is just nothing more than whatever. Great point, Joel.
All right, we're talking to Joel Blank of KFNC Houston. And Joel, we've got about a minute and a half to go, but I just want to ask you, shift gears, about the Texans. This week they announced the departure of Jack Easterby. And of course,
The firing.
Look, there's a lot of people who feel like Easterby has been very detrimental to the organization over the last couple of years. But in the last year, it seemed very quiet with him. What was the catalyst for his departure this week? What do you think finally got this to a tipping point?
Well, I think there's a couple things, David. I think one, on the bye week, the general manager doesn't have to talk as much. The team doesn't have to answer for this. So they could kind of sweep it under the rug, but get it out from under their past and start a completely anew. Because no matter what you've done so far positively, the negative dark cloud that was still left, I always say this, Deshaun Watson was the dark cloud that hovered around NRG Stadium, but the shade that was left behind is Jack Easterby. And a lot of people still said they weren't coming back till he went. He went. And now they can clearly and 100% unequivocally go forward positively with a new attitude, a new outlook, a new rebuilding philosophy. And they don't have to answer to anybody else. And now Nick Caserio sends the statement to the entire league, this is my show now, and I'm running it my way. There are no more hands in the cookie jar. There aren't any other opinions that I have to respect and deal with. I let Jack hang around long enough to be thankful that he was the one that found me for this job. But if I'm truly going to be given this job to do, I have to do it my way, and that means Jack hits the highway.
Great take. He's Joel Blank. You can hear him on KFNC Houston, also an NBA expert. Joel, really appreciate your joining us and all the insights across the NBA.
Thank you, Joel.
Anytime, guys. Always a pleasure.
Yep, we'll talk soon. Thanks.
This is The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao
and Carla Dawson.
Joining us now, the Progressive Insurance guest line is Spencer Tillman, Fox Sports TV host. In fact, Spencer, well, you're on with David and Carla. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Great to have you. Want to ask you, where will you be this week? What game are you covering, you and Tim?
Yeah, I've got a great one. One of them's undefeated. It's kind of amazing how this worked out. But TCU and Kansas State, a couple of great programs, one of them with new coaches, and that part of it has really been unique, along with Kansas, which is a third part of the kind of new coaching narrative that we see across the nation. These guys are able to make headway really, really quickly because of the transfer portal. And so we got one of those games that's got about nine different transfer guys in there that are marquee positions. You know, Martinez, the quarterback for Kansas State, chief among them. So it's going to be an exciting game. We're looking forward to it, and it should be fun.
It will be. Listen, I want to ask you, I've been dying to ask you, about your Oklahoma Sooners. For those of you who don't know, Spencer played for the Sooners, got a national championship ring with the Sooners, and, of course, a huge year of adjustments when Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams left town to go over to USC, I might say Carla's USC Trojans. When that happened,
don't hold it against me, Spencer.
I don't, not at all. But I thought, uh-oh, what's going to happen? And look, it's been a rocky start. What's the state of the Sooner Nation right now?
Well, I think obviously they're in transition. There's no question about that. I've got a good friend who has a son that plays defensive back, a starter for the last 3 years in that position. After switching receiver, now he's probably going to go back on the other side of the ball. And when that happens, David, it's indicative of a dearth of talent, which seems crazy to be saying that at Oklahoma. But I've always said, with a couple of caveats, that Oklahoma is not sitting in the hotbed of recruiting talent. Mm-hmm. I mean, even during the years before my time and others, Billy Sims and going back to Steve Davis and just the great athletes that have played there over the years, there was always a modicum of Texas representation on that roster. Guys who had been spurned, maybe didn't receive opportunity from Texas. Baker Mayfield, probably more recent among them, had a chip on their shoulder. So that plays into the whole DNA of what Oklahoma is about. And if that's missing for whatever reason, and we can unpack that at a different time, but the bottom line is there is a shift. NIL has something to do with it. The transfer portal has something to do with it. The cultural shift and certainly the exit of one of the brightest minds in college football. And Lincoln Riley has something to do with it. If you look at the last couple of Heisman Trophy winners, obviously he was the one that shepherded those guys through that process. And so you lose that kind of IP, man. You're going to be struggling a little bit. And it happened so quickly that in taking your starting quarterback with you, not only do you have the IP, you have the asset. And so it left Oklahoma in quite of a lurch. But they had to go to a guy who was familiar with the program, but it was a defensive-oriented guy. So you've got that to deal with. And you've got young people who are on the come, but those people don't really have the DNA that a Lincoln Riley did. And they'll eventually bounce back. But it's going to be a lot more arduous than most people think.
Well, that's right. There was such relief when they got Brent Venables and the thought, well, now they've got somebody who can step in and keep the beat going. But it's obviously not been easy. And one point you just highlighted that I find interesting is, yes, Lincoln Riley, offensive-minded coach, and they had great offenses. Brett Venables comes in as a history of a defensive side of the ball, and it almost has to change the entire character of the team. And that's a big transition in and of itself.
It really is, particularly when the last 10 or dozen years have been more shifted toward wide-open schemes. And although the scoring is down on average, as a mean, those numbers are probably down about 7 points per average per game, which is a lot, you know, given this era that we're in right now, the wide-open era. But if you notice, the Iowa State and other programs have started to develop these 3-3-1 concepts that are defending these spread concepts a lot more effectively. So that shift was taking place still. That was not the move that you want to make going all the way to the defensive side of the ball to develop your identity. I mean, there was a time when I played the game when we could do that with the Brian Bosworths of the world and the Tony Casillas and so forth, and we had profound defenses that complement our great offenses, but we always began with offense. And so if you have a dearth of offense these days, man, you're behind big time. So Oklahoma's in a bit of a transition. I mean, a significant one, in my opinion. I mean, fans don't like to hear that kind of talk, but I'm an analyst. I say what I see, and it's going to take a while for them to get back.
And they're going to need to figure it out before they hop on over to the SEC West, which is going to
Oh, my God.
Woo, man, that's going to be tricky.
Nala, that's going to be a bugaboo big time, and I'll just leave that there, man, because when you come, you better bring your big boy pants when you play in that league.
No kidding.
Yes. Having said it, that's the CBS for nearly 20 seasons, man. I can tell you, they love their defenses. And here's the thing. They will adapt, you know, a publisher perish like it is in academia. They will adapt or die. And that's exactly what Nick Saban did. You know, I remember Kevin Sumlin, 2012, mm-hmm. came in there with Johnny Manziel and just, you know, in Tuscaloosa and run roughshod through him. But, you know, he complained for a little while, did Nick Saban. But after a while, he just started to adapt, right?
Right.
If you can't beat him, just join him. So that's what they did. And lo and behold, they're slinging the ball around. And look, the last time I checked, was the Heisman Trophy winner, came from Alabama, of all places. We wouldn't have said that 8 years ago.
No kidding. You are so right about that. And really, Jalen Hurts brought in the whole dual threat situation, too, to Alabama mm-hmm. that they'd never had before, which is exciting. Let me ask you about Alabama, Spencer. So, obviously, this weekend saw a huge shakeup in the top of the charts with Alabama falling to 6 behind Clemson, mm-hmm. you know, Josh Heupel, coach of the year for me at Tennessee for sure. But I want to ask you about Alabama. I mean, I respect Nick Saban. I love watching what he does. This team to me looks undisciplined. I mean, the penalties are insane. They just don't look like they're as well coached. So I want to ask you about Bill O'Brien's end responsibility for that. It's the third time really this season that, to me, they've been outmaneuvered. It was at Texas, which they escaped with a win. A&M escaped with a win. And then mm-hmm. Tennessee finally caught up to them. What do you see going on in Tuscaloosa, Spencer?
Well, Carla, that's great analysis. I mean, you just nailed it right there. All of the above is what's going on. And if I would add anything to it, I would just, from a philosophical standpoint, is give people an overview. In college football, tradition is the currency of our game, right? And so mm-hmm. when you look at it from that standpoint, the impact of your influence when the ratings come out or the polls come out of the following year, you're going to get those traditional schools that will have the benefit of the doubt, irrespective right. of what may have happened that previous year. They will get the benefit of the doubt. But if there's anyone who had any kind of equity built up and the ability to do that, it certainly would be Nick Saban at Alabama. I mean, the guy just hemorrhages national championships, right?
Right.
But what happens is when you lose offensive coordinators, when you look at 9 of those 11 coaches from the 2008 squad are now coaching the University of Texas with Sark in his company, they've got about 9 guys that were on that staff in some capacity, analysts and so forth. He's got the tight end coach. He's got 2 analysts, and he's got another position coach, Pete Kwiatkowski, and others that are there and having been at Alabama. And so all of that intellectual capital cannot be lost. At some point in time, you start to see that manifest on the football field. Nick is the centerpiece. He's the fulcrum of what they do. But when you start to lose all of those other parts, man, and Nick is edging around 70 years of age, you're going to lose some things. And so now they look mortal, and they are mortal.
We're talking to Spencer Tillman. He's got a Super Bowl ring with the 49ers and a national championship ring with the Oklahoma Sooners. All right, let's go to the University of Texas. Big expectations yep. coming into the season. They've got their quarterback healthy now. What's the ceiling for this team at this point?
Yeah, Ewers is a big-time talent, and I think the timing on his arrival back to play Oklahoma was perfect. You know, a homegrown kid from the state of Texas that is so passionate about playing there after having the cup of coffee at Ohio State. I think there was no way he was going to miss that game. And to be able to come back and play on that big stage, instantly catapult yourself to that position, I think is going to help that program. And I think it's in great hands, David. I'm a big fan of Sark. I think the coach is rejuvenated. He has reclaimed a modicum of reality with respect to how tenuous having that position can be, no matter where you are, if it's at USC or any other place, and certainly Texas is in that same ilk historically. I think he has a different purview of life. And so when you combine all of that greater appreciation, always going to have the pick of the litter as far as talent is concerned, and just an awareness and coaching staff, intellectual capital that knows how to recruit, I think it's going to help them, because I think Texas was another one of those programs that was in a very difficult spot that they weren't aware of. And it has more to do with what I call soft leadership things with respect to its inability to reconcile its history and why they were losing out on a couple of key players. And parents would occasionally call me, and it got to the point where it became routine. They wanted to know where the University of Texas stood with respect to its race relations and its understanding of players and what impact that had. And there's wow. a bit of hubris that goes along with that that was problematic, that wasn't on their radar. And I even thought it was even more suspect when they brought Gary Patterson in there, because he's got some issues as well. So I'm not being unfair about this. I'm telling you this from an empirical point of view, having known the coaches coaches involved and the people and the parents and the players involved, they've got some things to clean up. I'm not talking about Texas now. I'm talking about Gary Patterson and TCU when he was there. And Sonny Dykes has done a wonderful job of cleaning that up and turning it around. I think that's the reason why you see their playing at a high level right now, why we're excited about seeing that game. But that was a questionable move, in my opinion. Gary has certainly helped him on the defensive side of the ball, but in terms of recruiting, it's yet to be seen if and whatever impact it may have.
That is great insight, Spencer, because I was confused by the Gary Patterson thing, too, and so you shed some really great light on that. I know we're talking a lot of Texas football, but there's a lot happening in Texas. Jimbo Fisher, A&M, he's in the fifth season. Do you see this working?
I don't see them sitting idle very long. Mm-hmm. He may get another year's grace, but beyond that, if he's not winning championships, I think it's going to be a long road to hope, because I think what happens is the patina of him being a quarterback whisperer starts to fade away there, because you have to start producing those guys, right? And we haven't seen that recently. So got great respect for him, like him. He's been through some tough times on the personal side of life in the last 7-6 years or so, but he's navigated that and managed to emerge, nailed down the A&M job and got paid for it, backed the Brinks truck up on him. But I'm telling you, ultimately this game is about production. If you can't, it's like academia. You either adapt or you die, you publish or you perish. You either win or you get walking.
Yeah, and it's so interesting, Spencer, that you mentioned him, you know, being the, quote, quarterback whisperer. That has been A&M's kryptonite. I mean, they can't seem to get that right. It's been a platoon system, and it's been this guy and that guy. It's been an absolute mess. But speaking of quarterbacks, I'm loving that Hendon Hooker. Who do you have as a front runner for your Heisman at this point?
I like Hooker as well. You know, the kid, you know, what Lane Kiffin has done at Ole Miss is absolutely incredible. I mean, and so because of he's who he is, anybody that's playing quarterback for him is going to have a shot. If they've got, let's say, a 9-10-win season, they've got a shot at winning a Heisman Trophy. So I really like what Lane is doing there at Ole Miss. I think you hit on something I think that was important, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but you were talking about what were you talking about, Carla, just before you got on the
phone? Oh, we were talking about the quarterback whisperer and Fisher, that he's had a platoon system going with the quarterbacks, can't seem to quite get that right. That's what we were talking about before.
Yeah, and the point I was going to draw was, if you can't get that right, you know, the transfer portal has been a really hotbed for people. If you look at 72% of the starting quarterbacks in the Pac-12 conference, are the first-year quarterbacks are transferred from other institutions. Amazing. Look at the success that they're having. Look at the success they're having at Kansas State, for example. Martinez comes over from Nebraska, right? And he's a guy that, I asked Coach Klein today. I said, hey, look, Coach, how did this guy go from, what switch did you hit to get him from that timidity that I saw a couple years ago for South Frost to the temerity that he's showing right now? And that's not just a thing that happens overnight. The guy just doesn't get courage.
Right.
There has to be a lot of things that happen. So being able to recruit has a lot to do with that, because you got to get those kids, right? And then having a system, the intellectual property in the form of coaches that are able to teach what will have them in a position to get to that next level. So I think that that's part of it as well. I think anybody in this day and age, and I love the fact that college football has moved to this way. It's more competitive, and these traditional institutions don't like it. But to me, sport is truly mirroring what is happening in the broader context of society. It's getting flatter. Thomas Friedman was absolutely right. The world is flat, and by extension, its institutions are becoming flatter. And so you have to be able to collaborate and compete, be able to pivot and move a much faster pace than you have in the past. And so those teams that have been up the top will see themselves go down quicker, and those success cycles, being able to get back up there, will be faster for some. And you'll see the Coach Lance Leipolds and others emerge and all of a sudden are undefeated and then at one point in time in a position to win a conference title. I mean, the Big 12 conference has been turned upside down by a couple of teams that were also Rams a year ago. So just think about how fast that happens. That usually is not the case.
He's the great Spencer Tillman. Spencer, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Spencer.
You bet, guys. You bet. Take care.
Take care.
It's the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios,
here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. And Carla, I'm always just amazed how great it is to have Spencer Tillman join us. He has all these insights on college football. What stood out to me was his comment about how he thinks going forward with NIL and the transfer portal and all the action that's happening there, we're really looking at a world in the NFL that would be much more topsy-turvy in college football, where a team can be up high one year and down low the next, and vice versa. You can see teams like Kansas and Kansas State emerge and be relevant in very short order.
Well, let's just look at the in the top 10. Did you think last season you're going to see Tennessee at number 3 and Alabama at number 6?
No, and I didn't think that Oklahoma would be out of the top 20.
No.
I mean, they haven't been out of the top 20 in forever, but when you lose a Lincoln Riley and a Caleb Williams goes with them and they lost a receiver or two alongside that, Oklahoma's down, USC is suddenly up. And that may be the way college football will project going forward. I mean, we may just have to expect these ups and downs, more turbulence on who's in and who's out on top and who's not on top.
And we're seeing the same thing in the NFL. I mean, who would have thought the Jets and Giants are going to be a combined 9-3 at this point in the season? I mean, they've been basically 3-9 combined. I mean, they've just been terrible. So I think I loved Spencer Tillman's world is flat analogy. I mean, we're really seeing parity, which really makes it exciting. And I think in college football, the transfer portal has definitely contributed to that. And it's some giveth, some taketh. You look at Lincoln Riley with over 20 players that he has taken from the transfer portal, including Jordan Addison, his lead receiver, you know, his Caleb Williams and his quarterback he took from OU.
Well, of course, when you give the comparison to the NFL has had free agency. And
right.
Now college football basically has free agency
right.
with NIL and transfer portal.
That's right.
People are going to move around and bounce around all the time. The one thing the NFL has, though, is the recruiting angle or the original attraction of players to your team comes through an NFL draft, which is designed for parity, whereas the college football recruiting is really not designed for parity. It's really the college football emphasis is on the money, and the NFL is a combination of draft and free agency. But very fascinating. Great to have Spencer with us. We're going to come right back. Hour number one in the books.